This is Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Maya won't be with us this morning. She has an obligation in San Francisco, but we're fortunate to be joined by our old comrade and friend, Steve Zeltzer. Steve, renowned in the Bay Area for Labor Fest, which is an annual event involving rank-and-file labor and a complete conference demonstration of what labor is doing and labor's active participation in that as well. Brothers and sisters, our show today will address the dysfunctional capitalist state, which is going to be a series, and part one will be the crisis in education and the fight back. Ralph Poynter, of course, is joining us this morning with an update on the case and the situation of our comrade-in-arms and Mother Courage, Lynn Stewart. And Ralph, good to be with you, and please tell us where things stand as of now.
Well, it's always good to be on the program because your programs are so educational in themselves and so informative. But I'm glad to report that I visited Lynn yesterday, and she's in jail. Let's never forget that. But she is handling jail very well. She is now talking about her case in detail, and her health is good. She was telling me how many times she walks the roof, how many circles she makes at the roof. And I am uplifted by the response of people, especially you, Ralph, and many of the groups nationwide who support her. And she feels that we are going to win this because the nation really needs a win to turn back this oppressive, dictatorial, outrageous, and you know all the rest of the words for it. But as I can say, at this moment, we discussed the conditions. We discussed her fact that she has lost her phone privileges. She cannot even call her lawyers due to, I call it, medical malpractice on the part of the prisons, and her need to defend herself by giving my phone number to her cellmate, who called me when Lynn had gone off to the hospital for the third time and had not come back to the prison. And I screamed the alarm. I alerted everyone. You helped, Ralph. And through this carrying on, we have improved the medical conditions of Lynn. And Lynn reminded me, she says, she sent an appeal, a letter to the warden to fight this ban on phone calls. And then the warden sent it back and said it had to be on one page. She reduced it to one page, sent it again, and a couple days ago, it came back from Madison, Wisconsin. Some male person in a prison in Madison, Wisconsin, wondered how Lynn Stewart's appeal got out there, found out where she was, got her numbers, sent it back to Lynn, and then Lynn had it in her hand. It had never gotten to the warden. Tell me about keeping someone silent. And she handed it in the second time, and she reminded me that she had 30 days to go on this 90-day ban. I'm reminding you, in a prison, if you get in a fight and beat someone down, it's a 60-day ban. Lynn Stewart, 90-day ban on a phone call about her health. Please, they're trying to silence Lynn because she has much to say. They're trying to silence the movement, and thank, I don't want to say God, but thank the universe that we have a program like Ralph Schoenman who tells it like it is.
Thank you, Ralph. I want to point out, to brothers and sisters, that Lynn Stewart had been scheduled for surgery, and indeed, as you know, brothers and sisters, her case was pending before the Second Circuit, the appellate court, and of course the appellate court ruling was not the end of the story because an appeal to the Supreme Court is always pending and an absolute right. And notwithstanding that, after 2.5 years, this appellate court not merely gave a ruling, but they remanded Lynn to prison, even though an appeal was pending and even though the adjudication of the ruling by the Second Circuit was still in process. She was scheduled for surgery at the time. She was disallowed to have that surgery. She was remanded into prison. They messed with her medication. First, they wouldn't let her bring it in. Then they did allow it in. And when it was brought in, they didn't let her have it. Then they imposed medication of their own on Lynn, which had devastating physical consequences. And when she didn't return from the hospital, her cellmate called Ralph to alert him to the fact. Imagine, the cellmate informs Ralph why Lynn isn't able to be available to him to speak on the phone or what have you, and because she made that informative call, Lynn is penalized 3 months. It's a sick joke.
Also is penalized 3 months. you hit on some of the things that happened while she was in there and demand that she report to an institution immediately, not 3 weeks, go to another institution today. And this is what began the litany of problems. This is where we are today.
Right. And I have to mention that yesterday in the New York Times, there was an editorial which stated that cynical and dishonest people twist the role of lawyers in the justice system. And the New York Times editorial, very unusual, because the lead editorial is entitled, Are You or Have You Ever Been a Lawyer? And it raises the alarm that, quote, in this era, demagogues on the right are smearing loyal Americans as disloyal and charging that the government is undermined from within. And the New York Times goes on to say that there is a cynical and dishonest twisting of the role of lawyers in the justice system. And the editorial states, in representing Guantanamo detainees, lawyers were in no way advocating for terrorism. They were ensuring that deeply disliked individuals were able to make their case in court, even ones charged with heinous acts, and that the Constitution was defended. And the editorial concludes, if lawyers who take on controversial causes are demonized with impunity, it will be difficult for unpopular people to get representation, and constitutional rights that protect all Americans will be weakened, unquote. Now, the framework of this editorial, liberal though it may be, is very basic, because no case more exemplifies what the New York Times is addressing here than the persecution and prosecution of Lynn Stewart. Every lawyer is under attack through the persecution and prosecution of Lynn Stewart, and all of our democratic rights, civil liberties, constitutional protections are out the window if you can railroad to prison a lawyer for being an adequate, not merely adequate, but zealous defender of a client who she's duty-bound to represent, and no one does it better than Lynn Stewart.
I would like to add that our present government under Obama has decided that you, who wrote the torture,
yes,
Cheney, Bush, Rumsfeld, who've broken all of these laws,
Gonzalez, the whole rotten crew,
the whole crew, that is okay. Obama says, let us put that behind us, his Justice Department. Lynn Stewart, let us not put that behind us, because it is now, and it shows where this government wants to go. They want to take our rights, they have taken our money, they have taken our well-being, and as we are going to discuss, how they are trying to take, to finish off the education system.
Well, we're going to be addressing this, Ralph, because I think it's reasonable and fair to say that on the evidence, this is perhaps the most right-wing, reactionary, and anti-democratic administration in the past 50 years. Yes, it even outdoes the Bushmen. The Obama people have expanded rendition. They have rationalized and justified torture. Their Justice Department has denied every case, every challenge to the incarceration with indefinite detention, the use of torture per se, and the utilization of targeted assassinations of American citizens on the grounds that they are aiding and abetting terrorism. Brothers and sisters, this is the architecture of the fascist state. Ralph, thank you so much. We're going to be back with Ralph next week, and we're going to proceed now with our program, and we'll be keeping on and keeping on about Lynn, brothers and sisters, and the obligation for every one of us is to mobilize, to write to that judge, to mobilize opinion, to get every organization engaged in the demand for freedom for Lynn Stewart. Freedom now.
Lynn Stewart, 150 Park Row, MCC, New York, New York, 10007, and the number is 53504-054. You can look it up on the website, lynnstewart.org. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you, Ralph. We'll talk to you next week. Brothers and sisters, our program today, The Dysfunctional Capitalist State, Part 1, The Crisis in Education and the Fight Back. How do California schools get their money is the question posed by the California Budget Project, School Finance Facts. It demonstrates in documents that in California, state funding accounted for more than 6 out of every $10, 60% received by schools statewide. But that figure is not, in fact, an adequate description of what the reality is in California, brothers and sisters, because in 1978, Proposition 13, pushed by the far right, reduced to something like 1% the taxation on property, which meant that the schools, which are dependent on property taxes for their sustenance, were totally deprived. And the meaning of dependence on state funding, that the crisis in California and the cutting of the budget it not only starves the schools, but it exaggerates and exacerbates the class differentiation. Because, for example, in Palo Alto, where the percentage of funding from the state is something like 2%, as opposed to a working class community like Alameda, where the state revenue is 65%, reflects the fact that the high property values and the greater economic status of the occupants of Palo Alto mean that schools are adequately funded, but not in Alameda, not in working class communities. And the extent to which they're dependent on a state in crisis is a measure of the all-out assault on education at every level. It's not just at university level, brothers and sisters. It's the entire education process, which is under siege. Steve, you have been involved in this question, as you have in working class issues and Fight Back. I'd like to discuss what unfolded in the March 4th demonstration, the preparations therefrom, the mobilizations in San Francisco and Berkeley and Oakland and across California.
Ralph, thanks for having me on today. I think that the mass demonstrations that were held in California on March the 4th are really the beginning of revitalization of the youth and working class. It's the largest protest of education workers and students in California. This was actually even larger than in the 1960s. And I was in the 1968 strike at San Francisco State that went on for 6 months for ethnic studies and open admissions. But what happened and has been happening is basically the privatization and destruction of public education in California. And this was a planned scheme by the corporations and the capitalists in complicity with the Democratic Party here in California to basically liquidate public education. One of the things that we have, we can call it the wars, the booms, and the busts in California. California is a product of massive growth, in fact, the largest in the world in the post-war period in the United States, and at the same time, big busts. And what's happened in California, there's been a tremendous crisis of the state that as a result of deregulation and privatization, the capitalists and the corporations in California have had a shift in taxation in which they pay less and less taxes as a result of Prop 13 and other measures which require a two-thirds vote, for example, to pass a budget in California and a two-thirds vote to raise revenues, not just on a statewide basis but on local basis. And this, of course, was brought about by the fact that there was a shift in taxation in California from the corporations to the homeowners. This happened during the 70s, and as a result of that, and this is under the reign of Willie Brown, the famous Willie Brown, who was chair of the Assembly, California Assembly, he allowed a shift of taxation, the result of which is that homeowners were being pushed out of their homes in California because of the speculative rise in the value of their homes. This was used by Jarvis Gann, two right-wingers, to say we need to change the structure of California in order to keep people in their homes. And that was Prop 13. But as you say, Prop 13 did is it limited taxation, the percentage for people who own property, and gave an advantage to corporations, shifted their taxation so that they would be taxed less. The result of which is that there's been a continuous decline in public funding in California. The Clark Kerr plan, this was the head of the University of California, provided that in higher education that every student, if you had the grades in California, would be able to get in college. Top 10% would be able to get in the CSU and the UC system. And that has been the case for millions of California young people, that they've been able to go to college, including myself, at very low cost. I mean, when I was going to college, it was $72 a semester. And what has happened over the last 30 years as a result of Prop 13, as a result of tax subsidies to the corporations, as a result of the dot-com bust, and particularly as a result of deregulation of energy in California, is that, in fact, there's been increased fees and taxes on higher education. So now it's thousands, $4,000 or $5,000 to go into college in California, which means that working class kids, even middle class kids, can no longer afford to go to college. They're being pushed out. And in the midst of this greatest decline since the Depression, it's impossible for families to even have their kids go to college. So they can't afford it. The protest that took place began really at UC in many ways with a group called the Student Worker Action Team, SWAT. And this was actually a group of students and workers, staff, unionists, faculty that began to organize against the budget cuts. And actually, they organized because the unions were refusing to take up this task. The official trade unions did not organize any mass protests. And at the University of California, the unions are divided, and they are basically face a corporatization of the trustees. The trustees of the University of California spend millions of dollars for Littler and Mendelson and other union-busting firms to attack the union. So the unions have been isolated, and the unions have not confronted the system crisis. And that's what we're talking about, a system crisis. So this SWAT team began to meet, began to organize, bring students, workers, faculty together at the University of California. And they organized a strike, one of the largest strikes at the University of California in November. And there was a rally of 5,000 people. Now, these assemblies that took place at the university where the students, workers, faculty would get together and discuss and develop a program where they could have a democratic debate and discussion. This assembly, following the strike, the mass strike at the University of California in October, they began the formation of assemblies, and they had a California assembly of students and activists from throughout California. This was first took place at the UC system. At that assembly, they called for a day of strike and action on March the 4th. And that took off at community colleges. It took off at the California State University system. It took off in the UC system. And at the same time, the union activists at the Oakland Education Association in Oakland, which has been in bankruptcy in the past under trusteeship, where they've cut the schools, they privatized, they've been brought in charter schools, began a fight to say that the California Teachers Association, the California Federation of Teachers, should organize in K-12. To fight these attacks in public education. And what we're talking about is a racist attack on education, because it's the poor school districts, as you were pointing out, the working class school districts of Richmond, California, of Los Angeles, where you have black, Latino youth and working class youth. These have been the hardest hit. They don't have access to millionaire parents who give money to their private schools. So in these school districts, there have been layoff of teachers, there have been cutbacks in libraries, and at the same time, there have been charters brought in to take over from the public schools, in which the charters cherry-pick the best students, and not students with special education needs and others, but cherry-pick, and then they get the money. They get the funds for the education. So there's a great deal of anger. These schools' teachers throughout the state began to demand that the CTA, which is a very conservative organization, they work with the Republicans, they work with Schwarzenegger, they're looking for a deal. They actually supported, at least in radio ads and other action, for March 4th. So what happened on March 4th, the culmination of that, is that there were protests in K-12 throughout California, young people. There were protests at community colleges. There were marches in Los Angeles, San Diego, UC Davis. There were occupations, and UC Santa Cruz was shut down. And in San Francisco, there was a rally of 10,000 workers, young people. This was the largest outpouring of working class youth, really, in the history of California that took place on March the 4th.
Well, I think, Steve, what you're describing, particularly as it applies to the role of the Democratic Party, is right on point. The Los Angeles Times on February 14th cited the fact that the California Democrats voted to cut and slash and terminate social programs in the state legislature and voted to give corporations $1 billion in new tax breaks while raising taxes on the rest of us in five different ways. Now, the role of the Democratic Party, and I have to say much of the official leadership of the trade union movement, which has long been in collusion with the Democratic Party, has been to facilitate the all-out assault on working people and on even those nominal reforms that had been instituted in times past through mass mobilizations are under siege. Corporations in California, notably the oil corporations, escape billions of dollars in taxation, and even the nominal taxation to which they are subjected is sheltered in offshore accounts so that their actual reported income is a fraction of the real income. So it's basically a boondoggle and a scam, and the Democratic Party is at the heart of it. Now, you described the mass mobilizations. I want to cite the New York Times, which writes rather eloquently about the protest of California students against the education cuts. Quote, angered by increases in tuition and cuts in state financing, thousands of students, parents, and faculty members and staff protested against California on Thursday at colleges, universities, and elementary schools to demand help with the state's education crisis. Called a strike and day of action to defend public education, the demonstrations were boisterous, occasionally confrontational. The campus and building entrances blocked at schools, but they were largely peaceful for the most of the day. The article actually is rather accurate. One of the largest demonstrations in California took place here in the north steps of the Capitol, where several thousand people used drums, bullhorns, and scores of young voices to get their message across. How are we going to save the future if we can't even get into our classes, said Reed Milburn, president of the Student Senate for California Community Colleges, referring to tuition increases and reductions in the number of courses. Her comments drew large cheer from those in the crowd, many of them students, avoiding classes to show their protest. California's public education system, the New York Times goes on, has been racked by spending cuts because of the state's financial problems, which include a looming $20 billion budget deficit. Layoffs, furloughs are hitting district after district and school systems, along with reductions in course offerings and grants. Governor Schwarzenegger, a Republican in his last year of office, said the payoffs and reductions in courses carried out by schools in the state were, quote, terrible, unquote. The bottom line, he said, was that they need much more. But where that money is going to come from is, as the New York Times puts it, unclear. Because the reality is that neither party has any interest in addressing this crisis. They are, on the contrary, deepening the crisis by their refusal to tax the corporations, by their absolute determination to slash all social services to make the working class pay for the capitalist crisis.
Yes, Ralph, one of the things that we should look at is the question of prisons in California and war. Because California spends more in prisons than they do on education. One of the reasons for that is the prison industry. Capitalism in California in the post-war period has said that they can't provide jobs for working people. Jobs are being outsourced through NAFTA and for the drive for profits by U.S. corporations. The result has been that more prisons are built in California than in any other place almost in the world. Millions of people are in prison. And at the same time, the war profiteers who run the University of California and the institutions have used these institutions for war. For example, Dianne Feinstein, the quote-unquote liberal of the Democratic Party in California, her husband, Richard Blum, was chair of the Regents of the University of California. He brought in Mark Udoff from the University of Texas, who made his name by privatization in Texas. He came to California and began to attack the students, declared it an emergency, a state of emergency, and then began to issue furloughs, as well as Schwarzenegger. Richard Blum is involved in war profiteering. His wife, Dianne Feinstein, was actually chairing committees where companies were being voted on, funds from the U.S. government were being voted on for his firms.
Literally billions of dollars, as Peter Byrne established in a series of extraordinary articles, Steve, and it's important to point to this because Feinstein and her husband, Richard Blum, are not merely the epitome of corruption and so far as they are the facilitators of literally looting the treasury of the federal government for billions of dollars for his military operations.
And at the same time in the University of California, there's a massive building construction boom going on. At the same time, they're telling students you're not able to go to college. They're building new buildings. Who are these companies? Companies owned by Richard Blum, who was the former chair of the region. So you have a situation in which the prison industry is funded, and the war that's taken away trillions of dollars for the working class and for young people. What they're saying is your choice for young people in California and this country is either prison or going to war. There aren't going to be any jobs for you. So virtually millions of young people in this country are faced with the situations they can't get jobs, they can't afford to go to college because of privatization of education, so they're forced into a war industry to join the military or go into prison. And this has led to a radicalization of hundreds of thousands of young people in California who see where are our priorities, where's the priority of our society. In New York City, for example, this race to the top and No Child Left Behind is forcing an attack on education by the capitalists. And the Broad Foundation and Gates Foundation are being used to privatize schools in the United States and tell public school teachers that you're not going to be getting money. You're going to be kicked out of your libraries and the private schools are going to take your libraries. This has happened in New York City. How dare them? And this is the kind of attack, direct political attack by the Democrats and Republicans, by Obama, who welcomed the firing of the Rhode Island teachers. And we just learned, and this is an important story, that one of the reasons for the low grades of the students at Rhode Island is because of lead poisoning. in that district. It's a working class poor district. So they're going to shut the only public school in that town and blame the teachers, fire the teachers. And it's applauded by Arne Duncan, Obama's Secretary of Education, and Obama himself, who instead of saying we need to take care of the schools, we need to shift the money from the war to education, is doing the opposite.
Yes, Steve. Well, actually, to address the question of Richard Blum and Dianne Feinstein, I want to point out, I mean, my colleague Bradley Wiedmeyer and I co-authored a piece in the Bayview, the national black newspaper, about the crisis at Hunter's Point, in which the owners of toxic land were allowed to swap that land for parkland adjacent to the black community, and worse than that, to impose upon the black community toxic and radioactive areas. And in fact, for something like 5 decades, the black community and the Asian community in Hunter's Point have been subject to an epidemic of cancer and of systemic disease as a consequence of the Navy poisoning of ground on which school children play. It's a scandal, and the beneficiaries of this are who? The Lenore Corporation of Richard Blum. Is it an accident that the Lenore Corporation gave $500,000 to the San Francisco Labor Council, I have to point out, by way of inducing the trade union leadership to look the other way with this poisoning of the working class and black inhabitants? It is part and parcel of the overall assault on the well-being of the population and working people. You mentioned the role of the Obama administration. Even more than Bush has Obama championed the charter schools and the privatization of education. More teachers in failing schools have been targeted by Obama education policy. It impacts California, of course. But the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education announced a list of 35 so-called underperforming schools where jobs and contracts of teachers are directly threatened. On the same day in Boston, the state capital, Mayor Thomas Menino and Superintendent Carol R. Johnson announced that teachers at 6 so-called underperforming city schools will be forced to reapply for their jobs. 5 school principals would be reassigned to different positions. And this follows the February 23rd firing of all 74 teachers and 19 other staff members at a public high school just over the Massachusetts border in Central Falls, Rhode Island. There, Superintendent Francis Gallo carried out the wholesale firings of Central Falls High School after teachers rejected demands to work extra hours without pay. Now, this mass firing of the Central Falls teachers was based on the Obama administration's national strategy deal with 5,000 of what are called the nation's failing schools, which are overwhelmingly located in impoverished working class areas. What happened with respect to the Central Hall firings and the breaking of a union? President Obama hailed the firings in which teachers' union contracts were ripped up. Obama stated that if teachers and administrators continue to, quote, fail, unquote, their students year after year, and if, quote, a school doesn't show signs of improvement, then there's going to be a sense of accountability, and that's what happened in Rhode Island, unquote. So what Obama is saying, that the firings are a model to impose his right-wing education agenda on students and school employees throughout the United States. Mass firings, teachers subjected to merit pay and so-called performance-based schemes, along with the plans to close thousands of public schools and replace them with privately owned charter schools with non-union teachers and staff. This is the biggest union-busting operation since PATCO under Reagan, because the crisis of education is an overall crisis of the working class, and it's a crisis of a system in terminal decay that resolves its crisis at the expense of the survivability of the mass of our people. What they are doing with this so-called no child left behind and charter school scam is to siphon off the students who are more advantaged and doing better and put them into charter and private schools and leave the bulk of working class kids in underfinanced schools that are falling around the ears of the students and teachers who occupy them, condemn them to a decaying infrastructure where the teachers are having to increase their classes from 18 to 25 to 50 to 60, as in the case of Richmond. It is an all-out assault on the very principle of public school education.
One of the very important things for our audience to understand is that one of the reasons this assault has been successful is that the leadership of the AFT, Weingarten, and the National Education Association have not had any national campaign against privatization.
This is Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, and we have with us today Steve Zeltzer, comrade-in-arms, who has been a longtime activist and organizer of the working class and is particularly engaged in the struggle to defend the rights of teachers, students, and staff in the fight back of the many in California against the slashing and cuts of social services, of education, and the massive increase of tuition and costs that are imposed on students. 32% increase in the University of California system. Massive cuts from the community colleges, which mean in practice that working class kids can't have an education. And one point I want to make. There's much blah about the fact that the students at the University of California are so-called privileged students. Let's be clear about this, brothers and sisters. The University of California system was a system in which the mass of our people could have a quality education without tuition costs, nominal tuition costs. That's out the window. And by the way, if you are earning $70,000 a year, then you are obligated to pay the 32% increase. Well, $70,000 a year for a family of four, brothers and sisters, in today's economy, is not going to be able to allow you to pay a 32% increase for one child, let alone more than one child, attempting to go to college in the United States. The practical meaning of this is to deny to students at the University of California the ability to continue in college. That's the meaning of it. And the impact, of course, on community colleges is even more drastic across the state and on high school students who even aspire to go to college. No jobs, no schools, prison or war, as Steve was saying.
Now, one of the things we have to look at, Ralph, in this whole struggle against privatization and destruction of public education is the role of the AFL-CIO and the leadership of the teachers' unions in the United States. The AFL-CIO, at their recent executive board meeting, announced that they were appalled by the support of Obama, who they supported with $500 million in the last election, to support the busting of the teachers' union, the firing of all these teachers. But in fact, the AFL-CIO and the leadership of the American Federation of Teachers and the National Education Association, with all their tens of millions of dollars, have launched no campaign, national campaign, to educate people about the privatization drive. And far from that, they have actually supported charter schools. AFT leadership is supporting charter schools in New York City, saying the solution is for the union to run charter schools. And this is the case also in Los Angeles, where the union has tried to deal with this crisis of privatization by saying we'll run the charter schools and we'll have a contest. They've bought into the idea that you need to have a contest between private schools and public schools, in which the private schools are getting the extra money from the Gates Foundation and the Broad Foundation. So what has happened in California was that the union leadership, California Federation of Teachers and the California Teachers Association, said we have to fight vouchers. And vouchers is the most overt way of privatizing education, by saying that you can use vouchers to go in any private school you want to. You don't have to go to a public school. So what they said is, we'll stop vouchers by supporting charter schools. And they allowed the introduction of charter schools into California. And, of course, the charter schools are the fastest growing schools. In fact, in Los Angeles, one of the big scandals in Los Angeles is there was a bond issue to build new public schools throughout California. In Los Angeles today, these new schools, which have just been built, are being turned over to private companies to run. They were built with the taxpayers, and now these public schools, newly built public schools, which should be going to public education, are turned over to private operators who are running them for a profit, because the Gates Foundation, the Broad Foundation, and the capitalists see this as a profit center. Education is a profit center. As a matter of fact, Richard Blum is also in the diploma mill business. He actually has investments in diploma mills. Wally's a regent of the University of California. He's actually profiting in diploma mills while he's at the University of California managing the university.
Well, that's the nature of this union bureaucracy, which Lenin called the The labor lieutenants of capital was the phrase that Lenin used. And I want to emphasize here that when we talk about the role of union bureaucrats, who sometimes have a salary ratio in comparison with rank and file workers of 13 to 1, is a defense of our unions, a defense of rank and file working people, and an assault upon the privileged bureaucrats who are in bed with the Democratic Party and who are essentially a transmission belt for the dictates of capital. Look, brothers and sisters, nowhere was this more clear than in the article by the Los Angeles Times about the California Speaker-elect Perez, who, as it describes, has, quote, deep pockets. The legislator who has cultivated an image as a crusader for the marginalized and powerless has advocated for the powerful. The Associated Press reports that Los Angeles Democrat John Perez will become Speaker of the Assembly on Monday. The article by Patrick McGreehy and Jack Dolan on February 28th, reporting from Sacramento, supporters of incoming Assembly Speaker John Perez says his rapid climb from rank-and-file lawmaker to one of the most powerful offices in the state is due to his intellectual prowess. But Perez, a Democrat who was chosen as Speaker in December will be sworn in on Monday, has a financial pipeline to billionaire developers, the article states, and white shoe investors who rank among the most politically active power brokers in the state. Now, this was a man who was an executive with the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. But where are his ties to the billionaire developers and the white shoe investors? Is this a man representing his membership, brothers and sisters? Is this a man capable of defending the crisis of working people, as this very assembly in which he is going to be a power broker as assembly speaker is the instrument through which the corporations escape taxes and the working class is subjected to vast and drastic cuts in social services? As the Los Angeles Times states, that his ties to these billionaires has outraged consumer advocates. Two of his mentors from the union came under the microscope in recent political corruption investigations. In fact, the article states, in 2009, his first full year as a lawmaker, Perez carved a lucrative exception into state law for billionaire developer Philip Anschutz, and he introduced the bill at the request of the enterprise car rental that would help boost the company's bottom line by stripping away consumer protection. This is an extensive article. Perez is but the prototype of what we're describing here. That's the function of the Democratic Party. That is why Barack Obama and the Democrats hand to the banksters, according to Neil Barofsky, $23.7 trillion, and that is a number, as Barofsky stated in Congress, which is only an approximation of the actual amount. This is something like double the entire value of the United States economy, $23.7 trillion to the banksters, and more yet to come as the next bubble is about to burst, and we'll be discussing that in later programs, and that underlies the crisis of education in California, that underlies the crisis of housing, the crisis of unemployment, the crisis of foreclosures, the crisis of food stamps, the crisis of an all-out assault upon the survivability of working people, while functionaries like Perez serve the bosses and the state apparatus which administers the subsidization of the capitalist corporate bankster ruling class in the United States.
And I think we have to point out that Art Pulaski, who's Secretary Treasurer of the California AFL-CIO, welcomed Perez as a great labor activist, a fighter for the working people of California. Now, this Perez has also recently supported the layoff of 800 SEIU 1000 members in the prisons who provide vocational and education for the prisoners. And what they're saying is, we're not going to have any more education rehabilitation in prisons. We're simply going to hold them in cells and without education, without the ability to have any future. And this is what we're talking about with education. This is why so many young people, so many teachers, so many parents of children are angry and infuriated, because unless they get an education, they talk about competing. Now, let's compete with the rest of the world, not develop our resources here, but we have to do this for competitive reasons. Unless young people get an education, they will not have a future. This is what's being told to the American working class. You don't have a future in this system. The Democrats and Republicans are not going to provide a future for you. They're going to destroy all options that you might have to go to college. And in fact, there's a $4 billion scam which people should understand in this country. It's called the Race to the Top, which has been proposed by Arne Duncan, Obama's hand-picked Secretary of Education. This Race to the Top provided $4 billion supposedly to schools for a program if they privatize, if they have charter schools. Now, California was coerced by the Democrats with the Democratic leadership. Gloria Romero, who's another leading Democrat from Los Angeles, she said, we have to change the law to get some of this money, this $700 million from California. So let's change the state law to allow for more charter schools to adopt President Obama's Race to the Top plan. Well, they changed the law, and lo and behold, California was rejected the $700 million. They couldn't even get that from the charter schools. Instead, a place like Kentucky that outlaws charter schools was given this money. Now, who were the people involved in deciding where this money was going? People from the Gates Foundation, people from the Broad Foundation, people who want to privatize education. So they're playing off the people who need more money for education to say you have to privatize, and even when you do, you change your laws, as they have done in California, you're not going to get the money. So a scam is being done on the people of this country, on the public education, to destroy it, to whipsaw it, and the failure of the unions to stand up to this, to challenge this. Perez and Romero, leading Democrats in California, supported this Race to the Top. They were advocates of it. That's why it passed. Even though the California Federation of Teachers and the California Teachers Association were against it, the Democrats voted for this privatization of education. There's no campaign against them. There's no campaign to say we're going to run people against you. There should be labor people running against them. Instead, they basically moan, and that's the result of this failure, this political failure of the trade unions.
Yes, Steve. Well, this is, in fact, not a race to the top, but a mad race to the sweatshop bottom, because as we've often discussed on Taking Aim, the underlying dynamic of capitalist politics today is to pit workers against each other in a mad race to the sweatshop bottom, in which workers are told to get lean and mean. They have to compete with workers in Haiti who are paid a dollar a day. You have to compete with workers in Shenzhen, China, to which an auto plant shut down at Tarrytown, New York, where they pay people $40 a month. You have to compete with workers at Toluca in Mexico, to which the Ypsilanti auto plant was sent, where they pay workers $8 for a 10-hour day. Brothers and sisters, the mad race to the sweatshop bottom is manifested now in every facet of life for the mass of our population. Long Beach, California School Board approves 755 layoff notices in response to California's ongoing multi-billion dollar reductions in spending for public and higher education. The Long Beach Unified School District authorized the sending out of 755 layoff notices or pink slips to teachers, counselors, and administrative staff. The school board's move is part of the implementation of $32.6 million cuts slated for the 2010-2011 fiscal year. Can you imagine the impact on local school boards of multi-million dollar cuts? The LBUSD is preparing to make these cuts and an additional $50 million worth in the following fiscal year because Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California, his latest budget proposal calls for a $2 billion reduction in funding for K-12 education statewide. Over the past 5 years, Long Beach alone has gutted more than $100 million from education. To issue the layoff notices, the Long Beach United School District had to overturn its class size reduction, which put the student-to-teacher ratio of 20-1 for kindergarten through the third grade classes into free fall, and classes are going to be doubling and tripling in size. And this will cover $11 million of the budget shortfall. But the cuts are part of a shock to workers throughout the district, which serves 87,000 students and is working class port city south of Los Angeles. The details about the cuts in all services for the students and for the teachers is mind-boggling. But, brothers and sisters, it's but the little continuation. And I want to mention, while we're talking about the cuts and the slashing of social services and the billions of dollars that are allowed to the oil companies and corporations which basically fund both political parties. Here is an important article, Steve, in the Sacramento Bee on September 24th. California selling buildings worth $2 billion. As the California economy roared in the 1990s and tax revenues poured into a treasury overseen by Governor Pete Wilson, the state laid plans for a series of new office buildings in Sacramento to spare itself from paying rent to other landlords. Barely a decade later, the Schwarzenegger administration is launching a process to sell these same buildings that were touted as long-term money savers for taxpayers. Now, let's look at this, brothers and sisters. There's a total crisis in housing, notably in California, but across the United States. That means that these buildings that were purchased by the state are now worth a fraction of their original value. So what are they doing? This is what the article in Sacramento Bee describes. The sell-off has lit up the skies for brokers in an otherwise downcast office real estate sector, where few buildings are being bought, sold, or even listed, especially in Sacramento. It likewise called fresh attention to the state's battered finances and stirred banter about whether it's smart to sell long-term real estate assets in a weak market. What do you think they're doing, brothers and sisters? They're handing over these multi-billion dollar assets of the state to speculators and developers at the bottom of the market.
And Richard Blum is one of them. C.B. Ellis, which is one of the companies handling these sales, is in fact owned by Richard Blum, the husband of Dianne Feinstein. So they're privatizing public resources, handing it over to private developers for a profit while young people in California can't afford to go to college.
Listen to this. Among the state complexes that are up for sale are Sacramento's largest buildings and most distinctive landmarks. Downtown's massive East End complex next to Capitol Park, finished in 2003. The 17-story Attorney General building on 1 Street, completed in 1995. The sprawling 1.1 million-square-foot campus of the Franchise Tax Board, expanded area in this decade at the city's eastern edge. Elsewhere, fixtures of Oakland, San Francisco, and Los Angeles skylines bearing names of politicians from Ronald Reagan to Hiram Johnson are also being sold off. They're being sold off, brothers and sisters. Listen to this. This is from Associated Press and from the Sacramento Star Online. California cuts deficit by selling $11 billion for $2 billion. California has put the for sale sign on 11 state office buildings, including the San Francisco Civic Center, the Ronald Reagan State Building in Los Angeles. Real estate firm C.B. Richard Ellis released a sales brochure entitled The Golden State Portfolio as part of its marketing strategy. Combined, the buildings have more than 7 million square feet of office space. State officials are hoping to draw offers worth more than $2 billion. The offers may be worth more than $2 billion, but the buildings' value are something like 10 times that, brothers and sisters. California and other state and local governments have been eyeing their high-rises, prisons, and capital buildings to generate fast cash. C.B. Richard Ellis, Vice Chairman Kevin Shannon, said the sale is a low-risk investment for potential buyers worldwide. We are confident that the expansive global marketing campaign we're launching will attract national and international interest in this generational acquisition opportunity. The very speculators and bankers who have been subsidized with the $23.7 trillion bailout are now going to buy up state assets. And what do you think is going to happen to that money? Do you think it's going to be going to schools? Is it going to communities in crisis? Is it going to poor people who are needing work? Los Angeles Times, 24 state office buildings officially go on sale Friday. Then it describes how the twin-towered Reagan State Office Building would be purchased by an investor. What are they going to do with it, brothers and sisters? They're going to lease it back to the state. So the state is going to have to pay the new owners millions upon million dollars in rent for the very buildings that they originally own that they're selling off at a fraction of value. This is capitalism in crisis, but capitalism in its essence.
The pretext of this sell-off and privatization is we have to do it because of the budget crisis. the budget crisis has been created directly as a result of the economic policies of the Democratic Party in California, which runs the legislature and controls really the legislature. For example, there was an effort to privatize the University of California in San Francisco, which is a world center for medical research. It makes money with Stanford University, a private university, a medical school. The merger failed. The privatization failed. What happened is $200 million turned up missing. Where did it go to? The consultants, the people who made money on the effort to privatize the University of California. And Richard Blum is a key player in all of this. He was chair of the Regents of the University of California. He's married to Senator Dianne Feinstein. He's a owner, C.B. Richard Ellis. So he is personally profiting from the privatization of state properties. His company, Perini, was involved in overruns at San Francisco Airport, the Los Angeles Airport. And these overruns cost the people of California billions of dollars, and yet he still continues to get contracts. You wonder why. So this is a politically manipulated crisis which is being used to attack public resources, to privatize, and to destroy public education. And this is one of the things that's happening in California. Young people now are beginning to see that the system is rigged. The system is rigged against them, that they can't afford to go to college. They can't to get a decent education in grammar school because their class sizes are going up. Their future is being destroyed, and the education workers throughout the state of California are seeing the literally liquidation and destruction of public education. One thing I wanted to add is there are many videos that we've done interviewing teachers throughout the state in Los Angeles and Richmond. If you go to laborvideo.blip.tv or laborvideo.org on the web, you can get these videos of these teachers talking about privatization in the schools, on how, for example, one teacher in Richmond talks about at her school, they said that they needed space for a charter school. They bring the charter school in, and the charter school is right next to their school. The charter school is getting all the money, while their school can't even get pencils and papers for their school.
And in Richmond, brothers and sisters, which is a black working class community, which is a city of desolation, the class sizes are between 50 and 60. The school infrastructure is collapsing. The plumbing doesn't work. The electricity doesn't work. The kids come into classes with broken desks and with leaking ceilings, and the teachers are confronted by impossible conditions. And meanwhile, brothers and sisters, in Tracy, California, they've decided to charge residents for 911 emergency calls. If you have a heart attack and your wife or your husband calls 911, you will be charged several hundred dollars. The city council voted on February 16th to approve a contract with a private company that will bill people who dial 911 whenever there is a response to medical emergencies or car accidents. And in this very town of Tracy, California, 60 miles outside of San Francisco, RealtyTrack states that there's a three-time higher foreclosure rate, that the percentage of housing units in Tracy in the process of being repossessed by the banks is three times higher than that of the state as a whole. So the result of the city council's imposition of fees for 911 calls will be twofold. On the one hand, many people will die, and on the other hand, ADI Intermedix will make a tidy profit out of the process. And speaking of making a profit out of the process, brothers and sisters, let me point out that the realty fees on these sell-offs, do you know what the realty fee is going to be on a $2 billion sell-off? Do the math, brothers and sisters. 1%, and they get much more than 1% in realty fees on $2 billion, is $20 million. And these are the cronies who are going to be making these deals of the very people who are selling off the property. This is capitalism. This is the crisis of the working class. This is the assault upon the mass of our people.
And another political issue which we should go into is that there's an initiative for the California Democracy Act, which would change the two-thirds ballot requirement for a budget and revenue. And in fact, the California Federation of Teachers is refusing to support that. Instead, they're giving $750,000 for an initiative by John Burton, who is a Democratic Party hack, basically, that would not change that revenue, but it would change the two-thirds requirement to pass the budget. And John Burton is a leader of the Democratic Party supported by the California AFL-CIO.
Well, Steve, I just want to mention as we close here that San Francisco School District is preparing to lay off 900 workers. The Unified School District's Board of Education voted to notify more than 900 school employees that they would be laid off this year. double the 500 workers that were notified about layoffs last year. That includes 318 full-time teachers, 139 teacher aides, 109 instructional staff, 98 principals, assistant principals, 22 counselors and librarians, 10% of the entire staff. A town meeting in San Francisco organized by parents drew over 1,000 parents, teachers, and residents opposed to school cuts. Overwhelmingly, that means laying off teachers, increasing class sizes, reducing bus services, cutting summer school programs. And meanwhile, the San Francisco transit workers have rejected the concessions contract. And where is the Democratic Party and where is the union leadership in collusion with the functionaries in the state, the mayor of San Francisco mandating massive cuts in the social services and in the pay to working people, brothers and sisters? The crisis of education is a crisis that is mobilizing hundreds of thousands of people in the state of California and across the United States. We will continue with this series on a dysfunctional capitalist state, but this is a process that is rapidly advancing, and the moment is here when, as Tony Mazzocchi of the once Labor Party said, the bosses have two parties, we need one of our own. We'll be continuing with this discussion, and thanks, Steve, for joining us today. We'll be with you next week.